listening to AJ Radio.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the program. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks. Our phone number this evening is 347-838-8976. 347-838-8976. We certainly welcome your calls with your questions or comments. And we have a good show lined up for this evening. Before we get too far, Lisa, or Cliff and Lisa and Lamont, how's everybody doing?
We're doing good, man.
Yeah, doing real good.
Awesome.
Doing good, Sam.
Okay, great. Lisa, let's go ahead and do the disclaimer.
Okay, we want to just remind everyone that a Just Cause Coast to Coast, that we are not attorneys, and that a Just Cause Coast to Coast does not provide legal advice. You want to contact your personal legal advisor for your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of a Just Cause or a Just Cause Coast to Coast. And as always, we want to thank you for tuning in, choosing to spend some time with us this evening.
All right. Thank you very much. And we're honored to be with you. And we know that there's something that you will hear or a comment or something that our guest or a caller may make that you can benefit from. And so we would ask that give your friends and family a call. Tell them to join in and call into or listen into a Just Cause Coast to Coast. Again, our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. Our program this evening, we're going to be talking a little bit later in the program to the Lake County State's Attorney. That's in Illinois, and his name is Mike Nurheim. And Mike was voted into office in November of 2012. He has a lot of programs that he's initiated there in Lake County. And so he's going to share that with us and around our overall subject of what can be done to stop wrongful convictions. As you know, over the last couple of shows, and we talk about it from time to time, wrongful convictions is just, you know, through the roof. But then we have record-setting years like last year, 2014, where there was a record-setting year for exonerations. And so obviously, you know, there are a lot of problems that need to be fixed in the system. Well, Lake County State's Attorney, Mr. Nurheim, is going to be sharing some of his thoughts and ideas with us. Well, joining us from Lake County, Illinois, the Lake County State's Attorney, Mr. Michael Nurheim, has been in office for a couple of years, elected into office in November of 2012, and Mr. Nurheim has implemented several programs to you know, bridge the gap between the community and law enforcement, as well as the DA's office. And so we're going to talk. I mean, the list is quite extensive here. So we're going to bring Mr. Nurheim on, and let's talk about some of the things that's going on. Mr. Nurheim, how are you doing this evening?
Good evening. Very well. How are you?
We are doing well. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate you taking time out. You know, when our team found information about you, and I know that some of our research folks have talked to you, it looks like, you know, you've implemented a lot of programs that would lean toward the preventative measures. Explain your approach there in Lake County.
Sure. Well, for those of you, the listeners that might not be familiar with our area, Lake County is essentially, we're approximately 800,000 people between Chicago, which is Cook County, and the Wisconsin state line. So we're up at the top corner of the state of Illinois. And demographically, we have a little bit of everything. So we have some of the wealthiest communities in the country here in Lake County. And we also have some of the poorest. We have communities that are urban, city, inner city type areas, and then we have rural farm communities. So it's really a slice of America here in Lake County. We have a little bit of everything, which presents some challenges with regard to law enforcement, but I think it's neat that we have that type of diversity here. Coming into office as state's attorney in Illinois, we call them state's attorneys. In some parts of the country, it's the district attorney. It's the same thing. It's essentially the county prosecutor. I knew that wrongful convictions were an issue that had to be addressed. I was an assistant state's attorney for the early part of my career, and then I was in private practice as a defense attorney. I did some work for indigent people in post-conviction matters, and then was elected state's attorney. So I've been on both sides of the fence and criminal law. And again, I knew because there had been a series of cases that had been discussed pretty heavily in the media with regard to wrongful convictions here in Lake County, that this is something that had to be addressed, because the public trust in law enforcement, in the court system, in the prosecution office was starting to crumble, and that's a major problem as far as I'm concerned. And I do believe in my heart that this issue of wrongful convictions, prosecutors should be at the forefront of addressing it. And so coming into office, I took a look at this issue. I've looked at it for many years, and I think this of wrongful convictions is cognitive bias, or that tunnel vision. And I had studied some different approaches to wrongful convictions around the country. I know we have, of course, in Dallas, Texas, with the conviction integrity units that have blossomed now in Chicago and Cook County and New York. And I think those are a good thing. But I think they're most effective in big offices. We have 74 attorneys in my office. There's a total of 150 people. So it's a relatively small, or I guess mid-sized, prosecution office. Everybody knows each other. We're kind of like a family here, which is good for a lot of reasons. But one of the areas where that can be difficult is when you're trying to pierce through this cognitive bias and you're called upon to review old cases. And if you know that one of your colleagues handled that case, it's going to be hard, I think, to be objective when you go to picnics with that person over the weekend. So I thought it was important in an office the size of mine to have an outside independent panel. So I put together what I call the case review panel, and essentially it is a group of attorneys and an investigator that are from outside of my county that volunteer, so they don't rely on me for a paycheck. And we have retired civil attorneys, retired judges, some civil rights lawyers, folks that really have not a lot of contact, if any, with my office or even with my county. And they're generous enough to volunteer their time to review cases where there's a question in terms of evidence of actual innocence. And the purpose of the panel is really to bring a complete fresh set of eyes to some of these cases. And it's been incredibly helpful to me. In addition to that, I have formulated an in-house conviction integrity unit, which consists of one of the investigators, a paralegal, and three senior-level prosecutors who help me kind of sort through some of these files and work on them initially as we prepare to give them to the panel. So I think it's been a good approach. It seemed to work well here in Lake County based on the size of my office. And again, I think when you look at this issue of wrongful convictions, it's that cognitive bias or that tunnel vision, which is, in my opinion, one of the main causes. And I think this is one of the best ways to pierce through that.
That's very impressive, Mr. Nurheim. This is Cliff Stewart. We appreciate you taking time to spend on the show. To lay out to say, you know, these convictions that have happened, we need to address them. Like I say, I mean, I commend you. There's not many state's attorneys that will basically, quote unquote, go against the system to go after wrongful convictions. My question is, as far as a preemptive strike against the wrongful convictions in the first place, some states say, you know, they have to put training in place for the prosecutors. They have to do one thing or another. My question is, what do you as the state's attorney do as that preemptive strike to say, we want to ensure that our prosecutors aren't going after people that, you know, seemingly they're innocent in the first place. If there's not enough evidence, if the witness is questionable, I mean, how do you get past that? I'm trying to get a conviction and get sure. them to understand that we are about justice as being a prosecutor, not just about convictions. Because from our research and from our experience at the Just Cause, that's what we have seen, is that there's a mass majority of the prosecutors that are going after convictions rather than justice. That's where a good amount of the wrongful convictions come in.
So, and that's one of the other components of the case review panel early on, was to identify the issues that you're talking about, and, you know, look at some of the cases where we've seen wrongful convictions, and what are our lessons learned there? What can we implement to make sure this doesn't happen again? What can I do as state's attorney with my prosecutors, with our law enforcement communities, to you know, hopefully put some things into place to prevent these from happening? Because you're right. I mean, we spend an awful lot of time looking at old cases. I mean, some of the cases I review happened when I was in high school, but it's still my obligation to review these and get them right. But beyond going through and trying to weed out wrongful convictions, again, a huge thing we need to be doing as prosecutors is to make sure they don't happen. So some of the things we've looked at are identification procedures. Certainly things like show-ups, we don't even think about those anymore. We look at what's the state of the science in terms of sequential lineups or photo lineups, videotaping, those things. There's some things going on legislatively here in Illinois that are I think a start, but quite frankly, they don't go far enough. So we've done things here in our county that go beyond what we're required to do by the legislature. For example, in Illinois, a murder and now a predatory criminal sexual assault, the statements in those types of cases have to be videotaped. The legislature a few years ago required statements in murder cases to be videotaped. Last year, they added predatory criminal sexual assault. Again, it's a start, but I think it doesn't go far enough. So what we've put into place in Lake County is a best practices policy where all felony statements are videotaped, and I think that's important. Training is huge. Training prosecutors, training police officers. We go around when we have cases. In fact, we just had a case that was exonerated this Monday. There's a lot of lessons learned in that case, and we're going to make an entire training out of that exact case and talk about how did this happen and what went wrong and how can we prevent this from happening in the future. So training with prosecutors is critical, but also I think it's incumbent upon prosecutors to get out and to train police officers, detectives. Fresh eyes on a case is important because, again, that cognitive bias issue creeps up. And I think when you have one prosecutor assigned to a case and they keep that case from its inception all the way to the trial, I think that can be dangerous because the prosecutor can then develop that cognitive bias. So it's important to have a lot of different eyes on those cases as they progress through the prosecution, just to make sure that we're looking at all the evidence, because inevitably that little piece of evidence that maybe you wanted to ignore because it didn't fit with your theory of what happened, that could be a crucial piece of evidence that might show that you have the wrong person, and somebody may see that. And we have a division in our office which is called Felony Review, and most prosecutors' offices in Illinois have it. And essentially what that is whenever there's an arrest anywhere in Lake County for a felony offense or a domestic violence offense, the police have to call one of my attorneys, and they have to run the case by them and make sure that there's sufficient evidence to even charge the case in the first place. And that's critical because those people are essentially the gatekeepers into our criminal justice system. And traditionally, the attorneys that were assigned to that division were it was sort of the kind of the low person on the totem pole, so to speak, because it's 24/7. It's not a lot of fun, and you're on call and you're up late at night. So they would always sort of put the new people in those divisions. But I think you really have to have experienced trial attorneys handling those calls for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're going to have the experience to know what case should be charged and what cases shouldn't. But the other reason is they're going to have the experience and the wherewithal to be able to stand up to an experienced officer that may be trying to get charges approved that might, you know, that probably shouldn't be. So there are thousands of cases a year that are rejected before even being charged that come into our system because, you know, the best way to prevent a wrongful conviction is not to wrongfully arrest somebody. But I think overarching all those things is, and you touched on this, is that culture. And that has to come from the top. That has to come from me. I have a saying in my office that if I ask any one of my prosecutors what their win-loss record is, they better not be able to tell me, because they better not be keeping track. And their job is to seek justice, not just seek convictions. And we do not reward people based on their conviction rate. We don't talk about a conviction rate. And again, I don't even want people paying attention to what their conviction rate is. And that culture has to come from me. So they know that it's okay. You know, if you're in the middle of a case and you start to have questions, it's okay to dismiss it. Or if you think somebody, well, you may have a charge that requires mandatory prison, if you think the right thing to do in that case is to reduce that charge and give somebody a shot at probation, do it. And the only time you're going to hear a question from me is, do you think, based on all the facts and the evidence, that was the right thing to do? And as long as they can tell me yes and they can explain why, I'm not going to have a problem with the disposition. And part of that is encouraging prosecutors, especially young prosecutors, to do what's right, to do the right thing. And again, that has to come from leadership, and that whole culture has to change. And I think it is.
And Mr. Norheim, Lamont Banks here. Good to have you on the show. I tell you what, I'm sitting here, actually, and this is sad to say, I'm refreshingly shocked.
Yes.
Of the position of a prosecutor that you have shared with this panel and the listeners of this show. I commend you 100 times over again. I don't think I can say that enough. I was wrongfully convicted here in the state of Colorado. And what you point out to, as far as the ethical, I always call it the oath of office that prosecutors take, that service, public service people do, this is what needs to happen in every prosecution's office across the country, is what you're saying. And the bottom line is, the fact that you are able to, and this is, I guess I'll pose this as a question, that when you find a prosecutor, in my particular case, the prosecutor vehemently, according to the Court of Appeals, my case was overturned in the Court of Appeals, citing malicious prosecutional misconduct. Now, the Supreme Court came down with a ruling stating that this particular action that this prosecutor took in my trial was categorically wrong 3 months before I went to trial. So with that knowledge, over 25 times this prosecutor, or ADA, violated the law that the Supreme Court had just released in the state of Colorado. My question to you is on that. When you find a prosecutor, as you begin to set up these particular units to investigate and look into wrongful convictions, what is the protocol? And I know you can't be specific probably on that, but is there a set protocol for a prosecutor that you may come across a case that looks like they had the intent to maliciously prosecute a case? We talk a lot on this show about accountability. What steps does your office take to hold these folks accountable for what they do?
Well, it's a tough question, and it's thankfully we haven't seen that yet in any of the cases I've reviewed. The case, for example, that we exonerated Monday was a case where the prosecutor that had that case in 1994, based on the evidence that he had available to him then, truly believed that he had the right person, and DNA was a factor in that overturning of that conviction. And it was simply science that did not exist then exists now. We agreed to retest all the DNA evidence and got evidence back, which clearly pointed to the innocence of this defendant. But what's important is the prosecutor that tried that case in 1994 was instrumental in not only organizing the DNA testing, but facilitating the release. So it's that they really have to make sure that the people are keeping an open mind. Certainly, to answer your question, if there's a prosecutor that's intentionally prosecuting an innocent person, or a police officer that's intentionally arresting somebody that they know is innocent, those people need to be prosecuted. I mean, there's just no other way of putting it. But I don't want this to sound like a cop out, but those are almost the easier types of cases to prevent, because in a smaller county, it's somewhat easy to identify those few people, or you just look for patterns. You look to see if is the same name coming up on all these different cases. The harder problem to prevent, though, I think, is the cases where you have prosecutors or detectives or both that really believe that they have the right person and they don't. And in my opinion, that's the tougher nut to crack, because that's where that cognitive bias creeps in. But when I took office 2 years ago, I sat down with every single person that works here, not just the attorneys, but every single person, one at a time, one-on-one, because it was important to me that not only that I heard from them in terms of their thoughts and their theories on what it means to be a prosecutor or to work in a prosecution office, but they also needed to hear from me and to hear it from my own mouth that, you know, this is my vision of this office. This is my vision of what it means to be a prosecutor. And I set the bar pretty high. And there are some folks that I think differed with the way I see this job, and they're no longer in my office. But for the most part, everybody is on board, and they know that our job is to seek justice. And in fact, I didn't know I could do this, but apparently I could. I changed our office seal and put the words "seek justice" on our seal, just because that's ingrained in everything we do, and that is our drive, is to seek justice.
Well, I commend you. I am elated to hear your vision. I mean, that's absolutely amazing. And you know, as you said, you know, I did come across individuals when I was, and I was locked up 7 years, and I talked to a lot of people during that period of time, and that in cases where DNA request was submitted to the prosecutor's office here in Colorado, the district attorney fought it, said, we're not doing it. You had an opportunity to do that before, but if there's an opportunity, if there's a chance possibly that this man may be innocent, and I commend you on what your ADA did and was instrumental in looking for justice. But again, I think it goes so much to your point. The culture starts at the top, and that culture in that office being set like that, and that's what we have been talking about for weeks on this show. The culture has to change, and like, if it starts at the top, and the fact and the steps you took to ensure that, even changing the seal that we seek justice, I mean, my hat's off to you. I commend you for that. That is so respectable and very admirable for what you're doing. We appreciate that so much.
Mr. Nurheim, this is Sam again. Just want to kind of piggyback on what Lamont asked you and the example you just gave with regard to the prosecuting the prosecutor in that case being instrumental in helping to push for the DNA testing and so forth. It kind of makes you wonder, Lamont, you know, what's in the water up there in Lake? I assume there's a lake there. It's like
we're right next to Lake Michigan, so we have plenty of water.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's
some good stuff in it.
There's some radioactive morality in the water in Lake Michigan.
Oh, man. But to piggyback off of what Lamont said, if there were a prosecutor, and I know you said that you know, you would that they would not no longer be part of your staff, but if someone was found to deliberately break the law in order to prosecute someone, or even if there was misconduct within the law enforcement agency there, what would be the approach of your office in handling those type of cases? I mean, you know, when you got bad cops, bad prosecutors, you know, how would you handle that type of situation?
Well, we prosecute them. I mean, thankfully, we haven't prosecuted a prosecutor, but we have cases right now where we have police officers that have been charged with various types of misconduct that my office prosecutes. I have an investigation division. There's 9 people that are investigators for our office. So if there's an allegation of police misconduct in a police department, my investigators can handle those investigations, and oftentimes do, because for obvious reasons, it wouldn't be appropriate for that agency to investigate their own. So we have those cases now. We have a chief of police in one of our towns under indictment.
Wow.
We have an officer from another jurisdiction pending charges. So
wow.
We're not afraid to charge police officers. But I do believe, though, and I want to say this, that it's my experience up here that by and large, most police officers are good people. You know, these are people that go to work every day. They risk their lives for us, and I do believe that. And I know that they have a good heart, and they're just trying to do the best job they can. There are certainly bad apples out there. There are bad prosecutors. There are bad judges. There are bad cops. bad plumbers, you name it. And it's our job to try and find those people when we can. But I'm very careful not to bash law enforcement as a whole, because there are some very fine people out there working as police officers.
Well, and you know, a Just Cause has an excellent relationship with all of the above, and so you know, we understand your position there, but we do want you to send some water to a few folks. We'll give you the addresses of a few folks who need some of that water.
But Mr. Nurheim, I mean, I second what Lamont said. I am in such shock. I have never heard the things that are coming out of your mouth from someone in a position like you. We've heard some retired law enforcement, judicial, state attorneys that take a stance that says, you know, when I was in office, these are some of the things that happened. I knew that they weren't right. So now that I'm out of office, I am being an advocate or a voice against wrong. To have you there, and I mean, it is – I'm in shock to have a state attorney that say, I have a police chief under indictment. I would prosecute a prosecutor if he's found, to be committing prosecutorial misconduct. These are not the things. I mean, we need to make a trip to your office and, you know, just hold you a party, because this is unheard of. But there's a good, happy, giddy, you know, happy, fuzzy feeling about that. But then on the other end of that, you have to ask yourself, why are there not more state attorneys, more prosecutors that are taking the position that you do? And my assumption is that you've got to be getting kickback from somebody does not like the fact that you are taking such a stance for justice. So, can you give us – go ahead, Sam.
And, you know, Cliff, the other part of that, too, is that – you know, you have to enter these type of situations understanding that Mr. Nurheim still has a job to do.
Right. He still has a job to do.
And that's what I think once people and I see as far as some of the accomplishments since you've been in office for a couple of years is to have community forums and to have that open dialogue to kind of bridge that gap and build the trust. I think you mentioned that, and we talked about that as well, to build that trust, to let folks know that you don't have to be looking over your shoulder just because, if you're not doing anything wrong, obviously you don't need to look over your shoulder. If you're doing something wrong, then you should expect to be prosecuted for it. And so, you know, we understand that, you know, the DA's office, or in this case, the state's attorney's office, they have a job to do, and they still, you know, have to uphold the law. They represent, you know, the people, but the refreshing part of it is the fact of not turning a blind eye. It's like looking at it across the entire spectrum and holding people accountable. Mr. Nurheim, you go ahead. You want to make a comment?
I was just going to say in terms of, pushback from people. And, you know, it took me about 5 minutes in this job to realize that no matter what I did, whatever decision I made, in any case, I was going to be criticized because there's, you know, people have opinions, and oftentimes they don't take the time to educate themselves before voicing an opinion. But that's just the nature of what we do. And I know that when I make a decision, I can't worry about what people want to hear. I can't worry about what I know would be sort of the politically popular thing to do. I have to do what I think is right. And I have to know, again, going in every single decision I make, there's going to be a lot of people that don't like it, and that's just the nature of the beast. And it may sound overly simplistic, but I have the kind of the look in the mirror test. As long as at the end of my day or the end of my career, I can look myself in the mirror and be proud of who I am and what I've done, that's all that matters. And if I only serve one term or whatever, then that's fine, because I'm not going to compromise my morals for a popular opinion. I don't even look at Facebook anymore or anything like that because of the things people say. But that's okay, because, again, that's our job here, and we have to make tough calls and just know going into them that nobody's going to always agree with you, and you really shouldn't try to get people to always agree with you, because if you do that, you're not doing your job. And I've gotten better at acknowledging that. Then it's hard on my wife to see stuff like that, but I remind her that if people aren't upset with me, then that probably means I'm not working hard enough. So it's something that that we just do, and that's what we do.
Well, yeah, if you ever decide you're going to run for governor, I think I might have to take up residence in Illinois just to vote for you.
Well, and I'll tell you, Colorado's beautiful. I don't know if you considered moving here, running for office.
Yeah, run for office. We will.
We'd love to have you.
We will campaign on your behalf. You bring some justice to Colorado.
Yeah.
Joining us this evening on A Just Cause Coast to Coast is Lake County State's Attorney Michael Nurheim, and Mr. Nurheim is sharing with us some of his thoughts and ideas as to the office there in Lake County, and some of the things, some of the excellent programs that. That he's implemented there. And so our phone number this evening is, give me 1 second.
Really, Sam? 347.
Thank you.
838-8976. If you want to call in with a comment or a question. Also, we have a couple people in the chat room that we have not forgotten your question, that we're going to get to that with the state's attorney. Be patient. Those of you who are on the phone, be patient. After break, we'll get to you.
This is A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Profile of the Wrongful Convicted coming up. At the inception of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, the host and crew decided to devote a segment of each show to an exoneree moment. The purpose of the exoneree moment was to outline the case and highlight the circumstances that led to a wrongful conviction. AJC Radio also wanted to highlight the successes and failures of the justice system, understanding why the system failed and what ultimately turned the tide and cleared their name. We wanted to hear the personal first-hand accounts. They were appalling, emotional, astounding, and overwhelming. Lives devastated by the system. Most of the people who shared their stories were released from the building, but not from the system. They struggled to get their records expunged and clear their names, find suitable employment and housing, obtain restitution from the state, and reconnect with their families and friends. And it hardly fit the definition of exonerated, which means to free from guilt of blame, to clear from a charge of guilt or fault, to exculpate. These are the stories of lives taken and returned, but must be rebuilt, adapted, reestablished, and transformed. The Profile of a Wrongly Convicted.
Ricky Jackson spent 39 years in prison, making him the longest-held prisoner to be exonerated in the United States. Ricky Jackson was just 18 years old when he and two others, Willie and Ronnie Bridgman, were convicted in 1975 of the murder of Harold Franks after 12-year-old Eddie Vernon testified he saw the attack. Jackson and the Bridgman brothers, none of whom had a criminal record, were arrested on May 25, 1975. They were charged with aggravated murder, attempted murder, and robbery. All three were tried separately in Cahoga County Court of Common Pleas in August 1975. No physical or forensic evidence linked any of them to the crime. Jackson and Willie Bridgman were convicted in August 1975, and Ronnie was convicted in September. All three denied they were involved in the crime. They all presented witnesses who said they were elsewhere at the time it occurred, although they did live close enough to the store that they walked there after the shooting and were part of the crowd of about 100 people that had gathered. All three were sentenced to death just months after their arrest. Those sentences were later commuted to life in prison. Prosecutors dropped the charges against Ricky Jackson after Eddie Vernon recanted and admitted he did not witness the crime at all. Vernon said a friend had given him the men's names, and after he told the authorities those names and that he had seen the killing, the Cleveland police fed him information about the crime and what happened. No other evidence linked the men to the murder. A gun and car seen at the crime scene were linked to a man who was arrested in 1978 for another murder, but he was never charged in Frank's murder. The fact that Mr. Jackson was sentenced to death despite his innocence adds to the growing body of evidence demonstrating the unreliability and arbitrariness in death penalty cases. This has been a profile of the wrongfully convicted with AJC Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by guests and callers on A Just Cause Coast to Coast do not necessarily reflect those of A Just Cause or A Just Cause Coast to Coast.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks. And joining us this evening is Lake County State's Attorney Michael Nurheim. And talking about several of the programs that Mr. Nurheim have implemented there in Lake County, Illinois. Welcome again to the program, sir.
Thank you.
We have, and I'd like to remind our listeners, our phone number is 347-838-8976, 347-838-8976. We'd love to take your questions or comments. In the meantime, I think, Cliff, you have a question in the chat room. Also, we want to invite you to shoot questions to us via the chat room as well. But go ahead, Cliff.
Yes. This question is from a person in the chat room. It's talking about Angel Gonzalez, who we know that his sentence was vacated on, I believe it was Monday or Tuesday, one of those days. But they wanted to get your position on, several comments since they asked their question. Okay. He was an innocent man when he was in solitary and damaged the sink. They were asking originally what was your intention with that case, but you know, we let them know, hey, Mr. Gonzalez was set free, and they were saying that, you know, he shouldn't have been there in the first place. So what we want to get is your position on a situation like that, that say there's a person that didn't commit a crime, ends up getting wrongfully convicted, and then while they're incarcerated, and this happens a lot with, you know, especially men end up getting in a fight, getting in some type of altercation, and basically picks up another case while they're incarcerated. So what the chat room participant wants to know is, what is your position on cases like that, when somebody is wrongfully convicted, catches another case while they're locked up? What is your position there in Lake County?
Sure. So what happened in this case was there was, as you know, there was in 1997, he was convicted of breaking a sink while he was in prison and got a 3-year sentence, which was consecutive to his, it was a 55-year sentence on the rape case he had here. Now, that happened while he was in prison, so that was actually prosecuted in a county pretty far south from me called Livingston County, and it's a smaller county where that prison facility is located. So I don't have any jurisdiction, any authority over the Livingston County case or the authorities, but I knew, you know, we vacated our case on Monday. When I knew this issue was going to come up, I called the Livingston County prosecutor and explained the situation, and the way I explained it was, you know, I understand you have this conviction that he broke a sink, but you know, he would not have been in prison to break the sink had we not wrongfully convicted him and sent him there. And to his credit, he understood that immediately, and he acted to have his conviction vacated. So that's a situation where you had two prosecutors working together to right a wrong. And unfortunately, because of procedure and jurisdiction, he was in our courthouse Monday afternoon. As soon as the judge vacated, based on my motion, his conviction, we were hoping that he would be sent basically be allowed to leave here in Waukegan because his family's here, but he couldn't because this case was still pending. They had to get on the call on the docket in Livingston County. They were able, his defense attorneys were able to get him the next morning because the prosecutor worked with them and worked with the judge, and the judge thankfully saw it the way we all saw it, and she agreed to vacate the conviction. So he was released Tuesday afternoon. Took a day longer than it ideally would have. The other issue in that case, there was really three things holding him up. The other thing was there was an immigration hold because he had He's from Mexico, and sadly, he had filed for a visa, was approved, paperwork came through, and then he was arrested on this case. I called our local U.S. congressman and asked him to intervene if we needed him to on the immigration end of things. He was prepared to do so, but his attorneys were able to talk to immigration, and they understood as well. So it was a situation where a lot of people had to work together to right that wrong, but it all worked out in the end. So it's difficult because oftentimes when that's going to happen, when there's misconduct that happens in a prison, we don't have a prison in our county. So that's always going to be in a county that I'm not going to have any jurisdiction over. But I think it's certainly the responsibility of the prosecutors to work together to make sure justice is done, and that worked out here.
And I'm in shock again because it seems like, and although this is the way it should work, it doesn't always work that way, but it seems like everybody. I mean, you got immigration, you have the judge, you have the congressman,
a DA in another district.
DAs working together to say, "I'm going to vacate my case. You should vacate your case." And without question, sure, absolutely, I understand this man is innocent. The judge to call another judge and say, "Hey, get him on the docket. He shouldn't be locked up." A congressman making a call on behalf, with as hot as the immigration issue is in the country, to make a call to say, give this man his visa, he rightfully deserves it, and the only reason he was arrested was wrongfully. I mean, your whole state, I'm telling you, there's something in the in Lake Michigan.
What congressman represents your area up there?
Bob Dold, D-O-L-D.
Okay, all right. And the reason I ask is because of Just Cause tries to, you know, work extensively. Well, not try. We do work extensively with members of Congress, and particularly those a part of the Judiciary Committees and the various committees that are have a lot of initiatives going on right now with regard to judicial reform, sentencing reform, and that type of thing, disparities and so forth. So, as you already know, those are hot topics. There are topics that are on the top of the agenda, and so you know it's refreshing, like Cliff said, to hear that all the folks involved in that particular situation, you know, did what needed to happen to help that gentleman and his family. A question: I was looking at your year-end review, the review of activities and achievements from 2014. And one of the things that you list as an objective for the coming year, and you can let us know if you've already got that going or what the status is, and that is to implement an alternative prosecution program. So what does
right.
that constitute?
Well, that is, first of all, we're not there yet, but we're very close. And it's sometimes unfortunate that some of the things that take the longest are things that shouldn't, like approval of court orders and things like that. All the major heavy lifting has been done. The program's ready to launch. We're just waiting on some forms to be approved, but it's minor. It's just taking some time. But essentially, the alternative prosecution program is a diversion program for first-time nonviolent felon offenders, whether it's drug possession, retail theft, things like that. This would allow those folks, rather than have a conviction dog them for the rest of their life, they can they come in, they accept responsibility. They're sent to, if they have drug addiction problems, to get treatment for their addiction, get a job, go to school, basically pay their debt to society. But then if they do those things and stay out of trouble, we will dismiss the case and vacate the conviction and actually help them expunge it off their record. And the point of that whole program is there's, I think, a lot of people that come into the criminal justice system that certainly aren't bad people. They just make a bad choice. They do something that, they're just not thinking right. And if there's a way to get those people to, again, they can pay their debt to society, but not have that conviction follow them forever, I think it's a win-win scenario, because we see all too often, and I saw this when I was a defense attorney, where you'd have people that did something dumb when they were 18, 19, 20 years old, like we all have. And, now they're 30, 35, they got a wife and a kid, and they're trying to get their life together. And it's hard because they have that conviction, which prevents them from getting jobs and all the other things that a conviction can hamper somebody from doing. So this allows those folks to have that second chance. And there's some programs in neighboring counties that have similar programs that I was able to kind of look at all the different programs around Lake County and pick the best of each program and then build our own. And I'm excited about it. I wish it was up and running already, but it's sometimes bureaucracy gets in the way of good ideas, but it's not going to stop us. It's just slowing us down a little bit. But I suspect that'll be up and running for sure by the spring.
And Mr. Nauheim, Lamont Banks here again. As you commented on that and the opportunity for people to really, and we talk about it on this show all the time, the people that have paid their debt. I usually announce all the time, if I pay my credit card that's maxed out and it's paid and I have a zero balance on that, I'm never going to get a call or reminded that I have a bill because the bill's been paid.
Right.
I think the problem in the judicial system, at least here, and probably other counties across the country with the exception of Lake County, you know, when I actually was released from prison, I had four different offers from companies with a letter. Hey, you're coming on board. I had paperwork to support that my case had been overturned and vacated by the appellate court. Do you know when they ran the background, and I had an opportunity to look at it in the state, when they ran it through a variety of agencies, they showed nothing about me being retried and found not guilty. They showed nothing that I was wrongfully convicted. They showed a conviction of 2000. That's all they showed. And then they had in very small print something in regards to time set aside. Now, an employer's not going to know what that is. I can't explain it other than the fact that I have paperwork in front of me telling you that the case was overturned. Do you know on the background information in the state, I believe it's CBI, has not cleared that off of my record? It is still present. My question to you is, and it sounds like you guys take progressive measures in order to ensure, at least for the opportunity, that that's not a case. You know, you have to go through so much. I've heard people that have waited 14, 15 years to get something expunged off their record. Now, those are people who were
People who are wrongfully convicted and then exonerated. And you guys have implemented a program that even those who went to prison rightfully
guilty
and spent their time, paid their debt to society, that you're assisting them and getting their life back up and running. This is – you continue to shock me. I'm telling you, you got to come to Colorado. Run for any office. I will vote for you.
And in my case,
well, it's a little bit selfish. I mean, on the one hand, obviously we all make mistakes, especially when you're young. But I would much rather have those folks out working and paying taxes than sitting in jail. So, you know, it's a win-win. I think when you can do that, and you recognize that certainly there are evil people out there, and there are people that need to be in prison. But there's also an awful lot of people that, you know, whether it's substance abuse issues that they're dealing with or what have you, if it weren't for those issues, they'd probably never come in contact with the criminal justice system. I mean, we could probably have a whole hour-long discussion about mental illness and how many people are incarcerated that really should be in a hospital. And we're looking at that here in Lake County. I'll give our sheriff a lot of credit. He's recognized that there's a large percentage of our jail population that really doesn't need to be in jail. They need to be taken care of because they have mental illness. But our state does really an awful job of supporting people with mental illness. We just don't fund it like we should. A lot of the hospitals have closed down, and you know, so the result is those people end up in jail and in the criminal justice system, and they don't need to be. We have a large veteran population here in Lake County, and sadly, a lot of those folks come back from overseas, and because of what they've done for all of us with their service, they may have issues with substance abuse or PTSD, which can sadly oftentimes get them involved in the criminal justice system. So we have a Veterans Court program here in Lake County that tries to deal with that. So we're not saddling them with the either incarceration or a conviction, we're trying to get them treatment because our courts have recognized that, again, if they wouldn't have gone over and served us, they probably wouldn't have had those issues. So it's really our responsibility, our duty to take care of them.
Well, it looks like also with the preventive programs, we talked about this just a couple of shows ago, that when you look at alternative programs and like you were saying, you know, sending folks to rehab or other options other than incarceration, and just I think on a national average, let's take drug rehab for an instance, maybe $4,000 to $6,000 a year for drug rehab, and depending upon where you're located, it could be anywhere from $25,000 to $48,000 a year to incarcerate someone. How do those numbers shake out in Lake County or in that part of the
That's about right. And we have we also have a drug court program here where in our drug court, I know there's drug courts all over the country now. Our drug court was one of the first in Illinois, and ours is a little different than most. Ours is not it's not intended for first-time offenders. Ours is actually high risk, high needs. These are people that every single one of them would go to prison. We have Class X, Class 1 offenders. Those are our highest level offenders that, you know, we've recognized that there's this class of people that keep committing low-level, nonviolent, sometimes high-level crimes, oftentimes property crimes, basically to submit their drug or to support their drug addiction. And they're, you know, they'll break into a car, they'll steal change out of the cup drawer, you know, and eventually after their 15th or 16th conviction, they'll go to prison, and then they'll get out after a year or so, and they'll commit another offense. They'll go back to prison for 18 months. They'll come out, and, you know, these people are just essentially spending their whole life in prison. It's, number one, it's costing us all a lot of money, but the other thing is we've recognized that class of person, if it weren't for that drug addiction, those people would probably never have any contact with the criminal justice system. So the concept of our drug court is to try to break that chain, get them the intensive treatment that they need, and see what happens. And we have about a 50% recidivism rate, which is, some may think that's high, but you have to keep in mind these are high-risk, high-needs people, and 100% of them, if it weren't for drug court, would have gone to prison. So I think it's a great program. It's very successful, and there's a gentleman that volunteers on a heroin initiative that we have that, he's the perfect story of why we need drug court, because a couple of years ago he was facing criminal charges. He was looking at going to prison. He wanted drug court. He was able to successfully complete drug court, and now this person who would literally today would be in prison is now in recovery, and he's in college. And again, I think we'd all rather have somebody in college than in prison. So it's a great program, and I'm proud of our county for having it. And I'm not going to take credit for starting it because it started before I was elected. But we're certainly going to continue it and grow it.
So, Mr. Nurheim, if you can hang around for about another 3 minutes, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we want to get some closing thoughts from you. Joining us this evening is Lake County State's Attorney Michael Nurheim. And that's from Lake County, Illinois. Having a great conversation. Got some good programs going on up there in Lake County. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice.
Today, innocent Americans are standing trial for crimes they didn't commit. Today, innocent Americans are writing for help from a prison cell. Today, hundreds of Americans have been exonerated of crimes they didn't commit. Researchers believe that at least 40,000 innocent Americans still sit behind bars. For them, the answers do not come easy. A Just Cause seeks true balance and accountability in the judicial process, ensuring that innocent men and women are not convicted and sentenced to prison for trivial, obscure acts that are otherwise not seen as crimes. For more information on how A Just Cause may help you or how you can get involved to stop overcriminalization of innocent Americans, visit www.a-justcause.com or call 855-529-4252. That's 855-529-4252. 529-4252.
Did you ever have something you ever wanted to do as a child? Be an astronaut, be a doctor. I always wanted to be a police officer. And there's a strong sense of pride in being a police officer. You know, we're not just out there just to stop people for the heck of it. It's just, you know, not doing. We no more want to accuse someone or charge somebody with a crime that they didn't do any more than they want to be charged with it. So we take that responsibility, especially with sexual assaults, very seriously.
I think my greatest fear, one of the greatest fears that many investigators experience is convicting the wrong person.
As police officers, one of the things that we're always very concerned about is the potential that we have for putting an innocent person into jail if we do not do our job properly. The end product for us is to know that we did our job properly and that justice is being done.
Picture this, a 75-year-old man convicted of murder waiting for his trial to finally go through. He's been on death row for 25 years now and finds out he's been wrongfully convicted and is completely innocent. Not only does this mean that 25 years of his life have been spent in jail for no reason, but that the actual murderer could still be out there right now. The bad thing is that this exact thing happens more often than you think, but you can help stop it by supporting our campaign to abolish the death penalty.
Listening to AJ Radio.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks. Joining us this evening is Lake County State's Attorney Michael Nurheim, and we've been talking with Mr. Nurheim about various programs that he's been implementing there in Lake County since taking office in 2012. Mr. Nurheim, I see one other program here, and then we'll get some closing thoughts from you. And you may have already talked about this, maybe not in this particular context, but I see that you have an organization or an alliance with an organization called Former Inmates Striving Together. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's a reentry program here based out of Waukegan. I'm proud to be on the board of the organization, which is, some people think it's kind of nuts to have a prosecutor that's on the board of an inmate organization, but I really don't think it is. I mean, it's about reintegrating people that come out of Department of Corrections, help get them jobs, help get them home, you know, some stability, so they can get back on their feet. And I think it's a very natural place for law enforcement to participate because, like I said earlier in the show, it's important. We want these people to be successful. They've done their time, they've paid their debt, and now we want them to be successful and not go back. So it's essentially a reentry program that has a lot of success here. We do receive a lot of parolees in Lake County from the Illinois Department of Corrections. So you know, most people that go to prison are going to come out, and it's really closed-minded to not think about that. So we want to make sure that when they come out, they're going to be constructive members of our community. And so that's why I'm involved in that, and that's what the program's about.
And Mr. Nurheim, Lamont Banks here again. I, you know, doing my wrongful incarceration, and this is the – and please understand if the statement is made that we are shocked in a state of bewilderment, if you will, wondering how is this even possible, based upon what we have seen. You know, they had reentry programs here in the state of Colorado in the state prison level that was actually laughable. to be honest with you, was a joke. I remember some guys that were incarcerated were going to the GED class to try to obtain a GED, to try to obtain, and actually they had started offering college courses. But what was so sad to me was, and I share this with you, based upon what I'm hearing, at least your heart and your vision, we'll see how outrageous this is. There was a gentleman, he was about 54, 55 years old. We were talking one day, and he said he was going to the GED class. There was no preparation in that class, but there was grant money given to the prison for that class being in place. And he said the instructor came into the class, and this was part of reentry. You get your GED, you can get some college, you can get a job. Came in, put his feet up, had a book, put his whole lunch on the desk, and basically the entire hour ate lunch and told them to stay busy, think of something to do. And this guy come to my attention that he couldn't read or write at 56 years, 54, 55 years old. He couldn't read or write, but he was in a GED class as a headcount for grant money to continue to filter in this particular program in the state, which I think is unethical and as tragic a situation that you could possibly think of. And I said on this program before that, you know, they'll let you graduate or sometimes without even having achieved your GED. They throw a party for you, give you some chocolate cake and some punch, invite loved ones to come out. But in this state, from what I have seen, there is no program that you call for reentry to give these people an opportunity. In one case, I know you said you deal with parolees. A guy had did 19 years who I knew, and he walked away. I said goodbye to him, wished him luck. They paroled him to a shelter. I'm talking within 2 months. He was back in prison on a violation that he was subject and around felons. Well, how in the world do you parole somebody to a shelter in an area where you're going to have felons and people that are not in a position and of a different class of people, and then you punish me? And they sent him right back to prison after doing 19 straight years. And this is why I explain that to you, because this is why the statement that we are so surprised, refreshingly, that you and Lake County is doing the things that you guys are doing should be the model for every county across this country.
That's absolutely right, Lamont. And another thing I thought what that reentry program does is that it leads credibility to the DA's office, to law enforcement. I mean, where the whole community is saying they're not just out to lock us up to get convictions. Everybody from the state attorney down is saying, hey, if you do something bad as a young person, or you know, just the spur of the moment out of an emotional you know, rant, you commit a crime, that we are willing to help you get back on your feet, get back in the community, and to assist in expunging your record. That is completely unheard of, but it gives the community the sense of this office is here from the police officer on the beat all the way up to the judges and the congressmen. They are here to protect and serve us as a community, not, you know, as, hey, we're just here to be guards over you. We're here to police you. No, we are a police force, but we are here to serve you and protect you as a community. It's astounding, and yeah, you cannot help but to commend you for the stance that you take, but also that culture, taking it from the top and saying, this is the way that we will, this is how we will issue out justice on my watch. And whoever doesn't like it, so be it. But we will issue justice as long as I'm in this position. And, you know, as long as you continue to serve the people, I think they'll keep you in office. You might have to tell them, look, I'm going to have to retire, you guys.
Yeah. Mr. Norheim, how is the based upon that county and what you've implemented, and I'm sure you'll have many years probably there if you choose to go that route. How, based upon the programs that you are talking about, how is the crime rate in that area? How is the return rate of people as a whole going back to prison or actually staying out and becoming productive citizens of that county?
It's hard to judge at this point because it's still, you know, I'm only 2 years in, so the numbers aren't
Statistically, it's hard to get a good showing. Crime does seem to be down, but some of that is factors that really don't. It's not a mirror image of what's going on in the street. For example, we see crime numbers dropping, but I know that that doesn't necessarily mean that the streets are safer. We have, in some communities, because of budgetary cutbacks, there's less officers on the street, so less officers, less arrests, and then some people may say less crime. But I'm always kind of cautious of statistics because they can certainly be manipulated. But I know our drug court is working. I know our veterans court is working. We have a mental health court that is working. I know this alternative prosecution program, it will work when it's up and running. So we're seeing positive numbers. It's just I try not to put too much into statistics because they don't always tell the whole story. But yeah, I know as time goes on, we'll be able to paint a more accurate picture.
And I presume that if you have a culture in place as you have there, you just do your job every day and keep doing what you're doing, and the culture being what it is, the numbers will take care of themselves.
Yeah, I agree. So I don't really even look at a lot of those statistics. I just kind of, we put our nose to the grindstone and work, and I think you're right. I think the numbers do take care of themselves.
Good to know.
So, Mr. Nurheim, you get the final word here, your closing thoughts, things that you might even—I know there are probably several folks there in your community listening, and I know you got a lot of other things on the agenda for the remaining time that you have in office. How much time? What is the term? What is the term as far as the state's attorney's office? There is it 4 years?
It's 4 years, so I'm a little over halfway through. And it sure goes by fast, but it's there's a lot more work to do. And I really do love my job. People ask me if this is, do you want to run for something else someday or what have you? And I really don't. I mean, this is a job that I really love. I'm one of those weird people that on Saturday I can't wait to come to work on Monday. And as long as I have that fire, I'll keep doing it. And as long as the people will have me. Or I should say, as long as my wife will let me. But I enjoy it, and I do. I have a great office. There's great people that work here. These are people that are really committed to what they do, and you can see that when you walk down the halls of my office at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, and they're still here. There's still people here working, or they're here on a Saturday or a Sunday getting ready for court, and they don't get overtime. They don't. They're here on their own time because they care to see prosecutors talking with the victim's family and crying right alongside of them. That's the kind of stuff that we see a lot. It's nice. It gives you a good feeling to work with so many good people. So I guess my parting thoughts would be to, first of all, to thank you guys for having me on the show and for what you do, and just remind people that I know it can be, I'm sure, disheartening when you see stuff on the news and people have experiences, but it's not all bad. There's a lot of good people in this profession. There's a lot of good prosecutors. I appreciate your kind comments about Lake County, but there's counties around me that the state's attorneys are just as committed and just as forward-thinking. So I hope that gives people hope, because I know it's not all a rosy picture, but it's also not all negative, and I'm certainly not alone.
Well, and like we've reiterated several times, it takes to borrow from a phrase, it takes a village, and the fact that you are making strides to bridge the gap, we talk a lot of times as far as whether something is reality or perception, it's gonna continue to be like you said, there are some young kids in certain neighborhoods in your area that because of their prior experiences, they may not even think of being a police officer. They may not even think of going to law school to become an attorney, whether it be a defense attorney or a prosecutor. But by implementing programs and reaching out and putting positive programs in place to help bridge that gap, folks will be able to see alternative directions that they can go down. I mean, in our community, we have a lot of folks in the African-American community and in our church who are mentors to the younger kids, and they can see alternatives, not necessarily whether it be law enforcement, but just other career paths, whether it be technology or whatever, to know that, hey, that guy did it, that lady did it, I can do it. Regardless of what my situation is right now, I can do it. And as long as they have a model that's set before them, then they have something to reach for. So as Lamont and as Cliff has stated, you know, our hats off to you, to your office, and we really, really, truly appreciate what you're doing there.
Well, thank you.
And I would echo that just to say that still I'm in shock. I'm astonished, but I'm so appreciative of the stance that you take, of the work that you're doing. And I can honestly say that tonight I have a different outlook on prosecutor's office. My outlook changed when I started to see wrongful convictions. You have given me the perspective that if implemented from the top, you can change or ensure that the culture is about justice. And if other state's attorneys, like you say, there are others out there, not just Lake County, but if others would take what you have done and say, we will ensure that from the top down, it's about justice. I don't care about, I'm not looking at percentages of convictions. I'm looking at justice, and I don't care what anybody says. My hat's off to you.
I know that you recently hired a communications director, and so if folks want to reach out to Lake County, whether to just say, you know, thanks for what you're doing, or maybe some folks there in your community need to know who to contact and how to go about doing it, what do they need to know?
Well, our email is lakecountysao.gov. We do have a Facebook page. We have Twitter. The old-fashioned phone number is 847-377-3000. And even though we're a big county, if you call our office, you're not going to talk to a recorded message. You'll talk to a person. And let us know your thoughts.
Okay. Lake County State's Attorney Michael Nurheim, thank you very much for your time this evening and for sharing some of the things that you have going on up there in Illinois. We appreciate it. Have a good evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Thank you. So to our listeners, if you'd like to listen to this interview of Mr. Nurheim or with Mr. Nurheim, you're invited to go out to our website at ajcradio.com. Again, that's ajcradio.com. And if you missed part of the early part of the interview, you certainly want to go back and listen to that because of the fact that Mr. Nurheim has a lot of positive things going on, and a lot of things he talked about are posted out there on their website as well. So we will post contact information as well. So, you know, Lamont, Cliff, you know, I think, can we classify that as a first?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially for somebody still in office. I'm telling you, like I said, we've had people who have retired, resigned, you know, former prosecutors, former judges.
Yeah, after they've gotten
right,
out of office.
After they've gotten out of office. But to have someone in office.
Currently sitting
to make the type of statements they said. But, you know, I think the key to him being able to do his job is that he said, when I look in the mirror and I know that what I did was right, I don't care what anybody else says. It's nobody in his, you know, in his profession sways him. You know, like he said, he's basically stopped looking at Facebook. Like, hey, it doesn't matter. It's about justice. And I mean, they didn't want him to exonerate the man that they exonerated. But he doesn't care.
And I think the thing that really stood out to me was that he said he took the time to sit down with every person in that office.
Right.
His humility is respectable. That he said he wanted to hear their thoughts. I think when you get the ego out of the office and you get the heart of somebody who believes in justice, and we talk about it, we keep saying it, the culture, that is refreshing to know that, and my hat's off to him, and I'm very appreciative. I think my outlook has changed somewhat. We know we got good cops out there, we got good prosecutors. He reinforced that in my mind tonight.
Yeah, to say that he's got a police chief under indictment.
A sitting prosecutor is just not going to do that or say that.
And he won't. Yeah, I mean, they might. I mean, they're not going to do it. But then if they do it,
they're not going to say,
yeah, he's under indictment. Because first of all, they're not doing it. It's not happening.
Not happening. Very, very informative.
Again, for archives of our weekly broadcast, you can go to ajcradio.com. And then for 24/7 programming, you can go to live365.com. Again, live365.com. You can catch us each Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and you can get there by going to prn.fm. Again, that's prn.fm. And for on-demand programming, you can go to the405radio.com, the405radio.com, or iTunes. We ask that you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and then if you'd like more information about A Just Cause, we would ask that you go to www.a-justcause.com. And I want to invite you to also click on the donate button. We are a 501c3. However, you should check with your financial advisor to understand what all that means. So there are a lot of helpful resources out there as well. And we have to remind you of the IRP6 that we often talk about here on the program, and that being David Banks, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, and Demetrius Harper, Gary Walker. These are six gentlemen who are wrongfully convicted. Wrongfully right now, sitting in prison, have been now for 2.5, going on 3 years, and A Just Cause is continuing to fight. The fight got a lot of good things going on there, but we ask that you keep them in your prayers. If you like more information about the IRP6, go to freetheirp6.org, freetheirp6.org. You'll find a lot of in-depth information out there about their case, profiles of the gentlemen themselves. I mean, you got professional men, and you know, something that Mr. Nerheim said when he said, you know, sending people to prison rather than allowing them to go to college, rather than allowing them to get productive jobs.
Right.
And, I mean, here you have a situation where you got six gentlemen who were doing something productive as far as developing software for law enforcement. When you talk about the case investigative lifecycle software. So for their story, go out to freetheirp6.org. We will be highlighting more of their story in future broadcasts. One thing, too, you know, that people tend to forget about, that is the fact that the impact to wrongful convictions or just conviction in general to the families of people who are incarcerated, and this situation has impacted the families of the IRP6 in a tremendous way. So, Lisa, what are we asking our listeners to do to help out with the IRP6 family?
We are asking everyone who has the ability to go out to GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. Do a search on IRP6, and you'll find an area out there where you're able to donate directly to the IRP6 families, to the children and families that are left here with their loved ones that are wrongly incarcerated. They needed your help. They needed whatever donation you're able to do is appreciated, but they definitely need whatever help we can get them.
All righty, we want to say thank you to everyone in the studio tonight, everyone who was in the chat room called in, and thank you to our guest, Mike Nerheim, the angel of Lake County, Illinois. What a man, what a man. Thank you for part of your evening to spend with us. We also want to say thank you to our production team, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson of K&D Productions, helping out Ill Skillers Girl in the control room, making sure you hear what it is that we have to say. Also to our production support team, they give us accurate and up-to-date information so that we can pass that on to you. To the truth, we know you out there. We appreciate it.
Lisa.
I want to say thank you also to Olivia and Miss Barbara for the work they're doing behind the scenes. We appreciate everything you guys do.
We want to invite you to join us each week right here on A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. That's every Tuesday and Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, that's A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. On behalf of Cliff Stewart, Lisa Stewart, and Lamont Banks, I'm Sam Thurman. Good night, America.
Good night.
Good night.